Venice Diary.
Hello, welcome to Global Critics Venice Voice. I'm the host Rita Di Santo on Fred Film Radio, live from the red carpet of Venice Film Festival. And today I'm with two brilliant colleagues. And from Argentina,
Fernando Juan Lima. Not that brilliant, you're a friend.
And I'm the very exceptionally brilliant Kevin Marr from The Times in London.
Oh, thank you very much for being here. And Fernando this year is on the jury of Orizzonti, so we are not allowed to make any comment about Orizzonti.
Not for the moment, at least.
Okay, let's start with Jim Jarmusch, father, mother, brother, and sister. Is that the right order?
I don't think it matters.
Yeah.
So we are in three episodes, three cities: New Jersey, Dublin, Paris. They are American family members. Jarmusch direction is cool. Sometimes the acting feels a bit stiff to me. And we assist into some repetition. Water become the reconnect the elements that reconnect the three episodes, and see, and so is some colors, and so it's very similar. I mean, we start in we like very few dialogues, very Jarmusch style, like New Jersey. He likes New Jersey a lot. Mm-hmm. And so we start with this daughter and son going to visit the dad.
Yes. Not great on plot. Plot isn't his thing. So I don't, is there any point even talking about it? It seems like he's telling this autumnal story of what inevitably happens to families as you get older, older parents, dealing with older parents, and then them dying eventually. So it's a midlife take on family senescence. And I thought by the third time, so it's you know, Adam Driver's in the first one, the second one is Cate Blanchett and Vicky Creeps. They're the adult kids, and their mother's Charlotte Rampling. By the time we got to the last one, I did the most Venice thing possible, which was I started to fall asleep, which I have an incredible meter or incredible sort of detector. And if a film is inauthentic and boring, I just fall asleep, especially the last, was it the last one last night? No, it was 6:30, it was the 7 o'clock screening. Anyway, didn't sleep a lot, but I found myself nodding off. And then, the reason I'm nodding off is because now it's getting really boring and it's just repeating itself. I blow hot and cold on Jim Jarmusch the whole time. Sometimes I like him. I hated The Dead Don't Die. That was the last time I saw him at a festival in Cannes. And I just, I find he's always on a knife edge between wanting to slap him and finding some of it funny. And I think that sort of, the way he makes films was incredible in the 90s or the late 80s whenever he came out. And it was refreshing. And I was like, oh, this deadpan acting style is so interesting. The big, huge pauses. He's deconstructing what it is to make a film. But I find it now, it's just like, oh, come on, just, you know, just stop messing. And I found it by the third little story, I was like, okay, I'm gone.
There's also this British humor. I mean, with Uncle Bob.
All right, Bob's your uncle.
It's not an American joke.
No, it's English, but he announces it. He says, as they say, Tom Waits says, it's an English joke, Bob's your uncle.
We didn't laugh much at the
I didn't laugh. It's just when he draws attention to himself the whole time, like this is a joke. But
I'm really interesting to know. Oh. From Argentina, this is a British humor. And
I do agree, I didn't like Don't Die, but I really enjoyed this. I really enjoyed it. It feels a little bit like Run for Cover. He's doing a little bit the same stuff, but I really love to have this kind of comedy. And you know, we are so used in festivals to have films about important stuff, and they do have a shock value or whatever, and just a cool observation about families and bonds, and even those repetitions between the three stories. It's the kind of film in which you don't laugh, but you smile, you know. And I enjoy that kind of film, even though maybe it's not his best film. It is not a masterpiece, but I enjoy it, and I didn't get asleep.
it's quite honest look at the ordinary life of normal people. Maybe we are too ordinary.
Yeah,
and it's like. I like this. Not it doesn't take any position. Yeah. It's just an observation.
I think maybe it has to do with his age. You know, it was really interesting for me the way he sees the father and mother, and the really important bond is between brothers and sisters more than with fathers and mothers. It felt to me that he's passing through this period in which the parents get old and they speak another language, and that was a little bit shocking for me. I wasn't expecting that from Jarmusch.
So? Yes, no, I was going to say that's my favorite thing about the film was that. And I think by the third film, when there was no parent, spoiler, yeah. The parent's dead, I missed that. I think literally the motor in the film, the emotional motor in the film, is the fact that the parent is alienated from the child.
Yeah.
So you reach a certain age when you just, and the Tom Waits character almost doesn't care. He's just like, well, he wants him to go, and then he goes off in his sports car. So I thought that was interesting, but it wasn't enough. And as I said, and that's probably why I fell asleep in the third conversation, because it wasn't there. There was just no parent. And the conversation by the third was just nonsense. Not nonsense, but it was just...
I like also the aesthetic. I like the aesthetic of the movie. Jarmusch is really great to create this atmosphere and the color of like New Jersey, Dublin, and Charlotte Rampling in the second episode. She was really incredible.
Yeah. Although I'm from Dublin, I couldn't understand. I know that area.
Yeah, you are from Dublin.
Charlotte Rampling's in Dublin. Cate Blanchett, I know they're not playing Cate Blanchett, but it seems so unlikely that threesome. But anyway, yeah.
Now, what's your favorite episode, if you have to say one?
Oh, the first one, obviously. Yeah,
the first
part. Yeah.
And you, for you?
I did enjoy a lot of the last one. I did enjoy it a lot. It was unexpected. I know it's for me, it was interesting also the way they get the dialogues really simple. Even playing with the repetitions, they felt like a lullaby. I don't know how to say it. It was really simple dialogues, simpler than the usual Jarmusch dialogues.
Okay, so we are. This is the fourth day of the festival, and we have another moving competition we saw today, The Wizard of the Kremlin by Assayas, which is this story. Oh. I don't want to be... I don't know.
Tell me this is good, because I'm planning to see it tomorrow at 8:30 in the morning.
So,
you say I'm asleep.
It's good and bad. You won't sleep. No, it's good and bad. You know, it's too long, but it's really interesting. It has so many interesting ideas about the politics we're living in now, Russian sovereign democracy, and how Putin got to power, why he got to power. I found myself never bored with the ideas, stuff I hadn't thought about, and there's an incredible motif. Is the question is, how do you bend a wire? And so you bend a wire by going backwards and forwards, left and right, left and right. And it's like, this whole idea is that Putin was never about reinstilling patriotism and nationalism. In fact, he was about creating chaos, going left. Yeah. And so his disinformation campaign on the internet was not about getting the right person elected in the US. It was just about sowing chaos. And so it's by amplifying the voices left and right and polarizing the way we are now, and just the film kind of argues that we're living in Putin's world, not Trump's world, not Musk's world, not, you know, we're living in this dangerous disinformation, that originated in his idea of bending the wire left and right. Anyway, that's just one of the things, but there's so much meat in it. Terrible role for Alicia Vikander as the girlfriend. Boring, horrible plot there, and just and it's, as I said, it's like 2.5 hours long. Yeah. But Jude Law's amazing as Peter as well.
Yeah, this story is just briefly. The story is about this character, Vadim Baranov, a fictional character played by Paul Dano, who rises to power into the Russian government while young Putin rises to power as well. And it's a game of power, politics, and manipulation. But what I really at the end of the movie, I felt how, because it's like one way, it's not, doesn't give you any doubt or anything like I'm not sure about this. I'm not. It's like Kasayas seems like he knows everything. It's like almost follows the facts in a realistic way, and I felt that it's really too much.
Yeah, there was so much information, and it was like Wikipedia, you know, like it's just so much facts, and I felt like that's all Assayas wanted to do, was he's going through all this stuff and just telling you about, and then in 1999, and then in 2004, and that's normally quite boring to watch as a film, but I thought because the subject was interesting, and this guy is real. It's a fictional character that Paul Dano plays, but he's based on a real character. So for legal reasons, they made him into a fictional character. So it just seemed it did seem that you were getting an insight into. It's like nothing new, nothing shocking, but just a really interesting take on geopolitical affairs.
Although I felt also Jude Law.
He's too pretty. He's too pretty as Putin.
He's too pretty.
He's gorgeous eyes.
Too elegant. Too everything. I can't see him. I've never met Putin, but yeah. It's not. I don't know. I didn't think that is believable, and I don't know if it was a con. I don't understand the choice of Jude Law, because it becomes again believable.
I know, but they should have, the casting should have flipped. It should have been Paul Dano as Putin. That would have been so believable.
Yes.
Yeah. And Jude Law as the spin doctor. And even when I heard about this film ages ago, I thought, oh yeah, Paul Dano is playing Putin, great. And when I found out it was Jude Law, I don't know, but the first three or four scenes, he comes on camera and you're like,
oh,
Putin is gorgeous, and then bit by bit, I believed his character, I believed his petulance, his temper, his sort of, like, oh yeah, he's really thin-skinned, he hates being called a non-entity, and he's just... he thinks the G20 bully him. You know, I just thought, yeah, this. I feel like this feels like an authentic character who's just really, really thin-skinned.
Okay, so let's close. Yeah. About Assayas. It's just really, this is the fourth day of the festival. Yeah. Do you have a movie that's really
I really enjoyed Park Chan-wook, and No Other Choice. A little bit strange for me, him doing a kind of social film. He's the more bongy film he's done, and it really worked with me, with a lot of humor, more than usual, and I really enjoyed that. I did love Park Chan-wook's films, and I really enjoyed Guadagnino and Sorrentino's films. Yeah.
Kevin.
Yes.
What do you think of Guadagnino?
Of the other films. Okay. You know what? I had a weird experience. I liked After the Hunt, the Guadagnino film. I liked it, but then the reaction here was so bizarre that I ended up loving it. Well, just, you know, this, and a lot of the reviews came out, and they were just. I feel like 90% of people who didn't see the same film I saw. I felt like I saw a film that was, you know, from the opening titles with the Woody Allen credits. I was like, yeah. Oh, this is a really interesting film. But it's a film that's poking the bear, just like a plea in the end for sort of nuance, for gray. I think somebody said, we all live in this gray zone. Nobody lives in black and white. And if you think you're living in black and white, you're deluding yourself. And I loved that message in the film. Yeah. It was an appeal for honesty. Just stop being so sort of mm-mm. And then it came out, and like IndieWire, all these different magazines were like, oh my god, it's so terrible. Yeah. This film, it's anti-Me Too. It was like baiting all these moronic, you know, half-wits about, you know, they completely missed the point. And there was a trigger. They're like, oh my god, it's anti-feminist. And so, you know, Julia Roberts at the press conference, the first question was, this film, I don't know who she was, said, me and my girlfriends, we came out of it and we were all saying it's anti-feminist. And I just couldn't believe that that people can see this film and think it's doing the thing. It's a plea for the opposite thing they think they're doing. And so then after, I was like, oh my God, a film that I quite like now, I love, because it's, I don't know, what do you need to do now to make a film that pleads for, you know, the grey zone when everybody is so polarised, like the Putin film, and believes that they're so right and they're so, my opinion is the best opinion. So I think, I like it more every minute.
There is one point that I really, really like about Guadagnino Suri, the length. It's funny, but I really like the length, because I think it's necessary to provoke the audience, because I felt the strongest point of the movie is this moral ambiguity.
Yeah.
At the end, it leaves the audience to think, who is what is, was she the young rich girl that was spoiled and wanted to it leaves you with so many questions, and it's the audience to judge or to decide.
Of course. And I was thinking about the three films. Maybe they are a little bit incorrect in some point. And I do like that. You have only one way of thinking, one way of telling the story. It's not good. It's not good for life, and it's not good for cinema. And it's okay to have this ambiguity. And he's not against anything. He's just pointing this grey stuff you were talking about, and I think it's okay. And I was thinking about Park Chan-wook films, even making a comedy, even if he works always with genres, he's speaking more about social issues than others that were with the flag or whatever. I do like this kind of stuff, even if they are not perfect films. I'm still waiting for the masterpiece, but I enjoyed these three films.
So wonderful. Let's close here, and we do always thumbs up, thumbs down. Just for Jarmusch, thumbs up, thumbs down.
Up.
Kind of in the middle. wobbling towards
me. Wobbling. I don't know. Yeah, I'm wobbling.
Okay.
Thank you very much, and see you tomorrow.
Thank you. Take care,
Fred, 24/7 on Fred FM and smartphone app.